If you're part of the work-from-home labor force, might I suggest you look into Xfinity XFi Complete? Hey, friends, it's Mark Arum. For my friends and sponsors, the Mark Arum Show podcast, Xfinity XFi Complete, game changer. Their fastest speeds yet, now with up to 5 to 10 times faster upload speeds included. 5 to 10 times faster, so you can do your best work while you're at home. Information online at Xfinity.com. Call 1-800-XFINITY or visit your local Xfinity store today. Welcome, friends. Hope you had a great weekend. Mark Arum and crew stacked and packed all week long. A lot of debate coverage going to be Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Again, the first and the earliest presidential debate is going to be here in Atlanta. It's Thursday, right? The 27th, Deborah. Here in Atlanta, down the street, we're trying to get Shelley Winter a press pass. We can cover it for us, but we're going to preview the debate heading up to the debate. You're going to hear the debate live here on WSB Radio, and then post-debate coverage all day Friday, starting with Atlanta's Morning News. Speaking of the debate, Eric Erickson is going to join us live at 10:35. I got to pick Eric's brain about the debate prep going on right now in the Biden and Trump camps. And also, Trump apparently said he's already made up his mind on who he's going to pick for the vice president as his running mate. And he said that person will probably be in attendance at the debate here in Atlanta on Thursday. So we might get two big news pops on Thursday at the debate, not only what goes on the debate stage, but also we'll scan, you know, there's not supposed to be an audience there, but I guess the presidents could invite some guests. And former President Trump says, hey, whoever I pick is going to be at this debate on Thursday. So we got a lot to talk about there. I want to start off with some breaking news that just popped within the last half hour concerning the Israel-Hamas war and by extension, the repercussions that we are still feeling here in the United States. Awful situation this weekend in L.A. And I picked up a local story that really made me mad. It's all related to Israel-Hamas war. The update, though, comes from Paula Hancock from CNN's in Jerusalem. Apparently, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says the Israel-Hamas war is now entering a different phase.
This is really the most clarity we've had from the Israeli Prime Minister since October 7th about where the war is going in Gaza. So he said that the most intense phase is over, but this means that the military can now focus on the northern border with Lebanon, where we have seen an increase in cross-border attacks over the last few weeks between Hezbollah and the Israeli military. Now, Netanyahu, in this interview with Channel 14, did also say that this doesn't mean the end of the war in Gaza. What it does mean is that the current stage in Rafah, where we have seen the most intense fighting for over the last month, has come to an end. Now, he also said something interesting, that he supports and is ready to sign up to a partial deal with Hamas, saying that that would be a deal to release some of the hostages, saying that after a ceasefire, the war, in his mind, would continue because he wants to continue to try and eliminate the group, the Hamas group, saying he hasn't given up on that idea. Now, on the face of it, it does appear to be at odds with this ceasefire hostage deal, the US-backed deal that the Biden administration has said Israel signed up to. We have heard from some of the hostage families saying they condemn it. It's simply not good enough. It has to be all of the hostages or none.
So breaking news within the last 40 minutes there. That's Paula Hancock from CNN in Jerusalem. So she referenced Channel 14 in that piece. Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli prime minister, just did an interview with Channel 14. And in that interview, he said, quote, the most intense phase of the war is over, which is a pretty big headline, right? What's been going on in Rafah and southern Gaza. For the fact that for the prime minister, who really keeps his cards close to his vest, for him to say that the most intense phase of the war is now over, that's big news. And you heard Paula reference that maybe the U.S., the Israeli military is going to focus their attention to their northern border with Lebanon, where Hezbollah has been raising some ire. We've reached out to Robert Berger, our correspondent in Jerusalem. He's going to join us after the news at 10. Update again, this breaking news there that the Israeli prime minister said the most intense phase of the war is over. That is big news if true. And maybe that will aid any sort of peace process going on, hostage release, et cetera, et cetera. Now, obviously, since October 7th, the Israeli-Hamas war, since the Hamas terrorist attack on Israel, let me start by properly saying how this all started, the Hamas terrorist attack on civilians in Israel. Since then, we've seen massive repercussions globally, not just in the Mideast, where we've been monitoring the deaths and the war and what it's done economically in the region. But, I mean, literally, the globe has been impacted by this. Probably the most severe has been in the United States and in politics. Everything's politics now in the campaign season. The hit that Biden's been taking from the extreme left on his position and his continuing support of Israel. And there was, I don't know if you saw the video, Deborah, there were protesters outside of a synagogue in Los Angeles this weekend. Did you see that? Pro-Palestinian protesters. And it turned violent. And, you know, a Jewish woman was beaten, and allegedly through reporting, the LAPD were told to back off, stand down.
Really?
And not because they were there, and they kind of, again, this is just reporting. I have not heard from the LAPD, but this was not just protesters on one side of the street screaming at the other side of the street. There was physical violence.
I feel like police would step in for physical violence.
I would think so too. Now, again, you see these videos on social media, you don't get every angle, you don't see everything, but there was clearly a Jewish woman getting beaten by pro-Palestinian protesters. But it's not just L.A. that's feeling the effect of the Israel-Hamas war. It's not just the college campuses that have been feeling the effect of the Israel-Hamas war. It's not just Campaign 2024 that's feeling the impact of the Israel-Hamas war. There's a local Atlanta business, and I just came up with, just saw this story, and we reached out to them. Deborah, we're going to get them on?
They're going to be on after 10 o'clock today.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm going to preview this. Well, okay. I'll preview the story, and then we'll have the business coming on. Good job, Deborah Green. You're going to be shocked at what's going on at a local Atlanta business in regards to the Israel-Hamas war. Again, some breaking news there. We're going to go live to Jerusalem, get an update on Robert Berger. Eric Erickson joining us live as well, previewing the big presidential debate and campaign 2024. And who will the VP pick be? All still to come next on The Mark Arum Show.
I think it's an important debate. It'll be a great opportunity for President Trump to talk about his policies and how his policies when he served as president of this country were good for every single family that lived here. They had more money in their pockets. The grocery prices were down. Gas prices were down. There was a lot more opportunity.
Governor Kristi Noem on the Sunday talk shows, one of the possible vice presidential selections that President Trump has to choose from. Probably not after the dog thing. But again, President Trump said over the weekend that he has already made up his mind on who will be his running mate, and that person will be in attendance at the debate here on Thursday in Atlanta, which you'll hear live on WSB Radio. So we might get some breaking news, not just with what's going on in the debate stage, but who his running mate will be. We'll, of course, bring you to debate live here on WSB, preview and post-debate coverage on Friday, on starting at Atlanta's Morning News. I'm kind of giddy on this, Deborah. This is. I've not been excited for a television show that
A television show.
It's a TV, or a radio show since The Boys, I guess. Did you catch up? No, I mean, I'm not caught up yet, but I started watching it. Anyway, we're following breaking news again. If you are just joining us, Israeli Prime Minister this morning gave an interview to Channel 14 and Israel, and he said that, quote, the most intense phase of the war is over. That's big. That is really big. Robert Berger is going to join us live from Jerusalem coming up after the news at 10. And we're going to have a special guest on after Robert talking about the impact that the Israel-Hamas war is having stateside. So I saw this article online about a small business, a family business here in Metro Atlanta. And you know how much I absolutely love people that go out on their own, put up their own shingle, and start a small business. That takes a special kind of person, a special kind of courage to do that, to clear your own path, make your own way. Right, Deborah, your husband's an entrepreneur. That's
yeah, it's a lot of hard work, but yeah. Isn't that the American dream, right? You came here to open up your own place.
I don't have that gene. I for whatever reason.
I couldn't be a boss. I couldn't run things. No.
Yeah, it's you're a pioneer. It requires a certain type of person to do that. And to be successful is even, it's rare. You know, most small businesses will fail within the first year. This one's not failing, but it is catching flack because of the Israel-Hamas war. So it's a cookie shop. You know how much I love cookies. In the Emory Village, it's called Ali's Cookies. And it's owned by an Israeli couple. They're from Israel. They moved here and trying to live out the American dream. Small business ownership. They make apparently delicious cookies, and everything was fine until the Israel-Hamas war started and the Hamas terrorist attack on October 7th. So I read this story. Shout out to Rough Draft Atlanta, an independent journalist outfit here in Atlanta. Rough Draft Atlanta had this story, and my jaw dropped reading this story. So apparently, Ali's Cookies, the owners, have been catching flack from pro-Palestinian supporters. From the article in Rough Draft Atlanta, they've received postcards glorifying the Holocaust, watched people leave in disgust at the store's Israeli flag and spit on the front stoop of, like, spitting on the business. They've also received hurtful comments on social media and in person. One customer went into, again, a small business. It's a cookie store, like a cute little cookie store. One customer went into the store and approached the counter and put down a copy of the book Mein Kampf on the counter. If you're not familiar, first of all, that's not a bad thing. That's Adolf Hitler's autobiography in 1925, Mein Kampf, promoting anti-Semitism and racism. That's some of the stuff that they're having to deal with. Not, as you mentioned, Deborah, it's really tough being a small business owner when everything's going great. But to deal with protesters and customers like that simply because of what's going on in the Israel-Hamas war, I've got news for the pro-Palestinian protesters. The two Israeli people that are making cookies in Emory Village, they have no impact on what Benjamin Netanyahu's doing in Israel.
It's a cookie shop. Who hates a cookie?
Exactly. Exactly. So I saw that story and I was like, you've got to be kidding. So the shop owners have contacted the FBI, after some of the anti-Semitic things that have been going on. So I saw the story this morning, and I sent Deborah the contact info of the owners, and they've agreed to come on.
Yeah, they responded. I talked to them earlier, and we'll be talking to them after 10 o'clock.
All right. So because in a perfect world, it's really difficult to run a small business. I'm sure these owners are there before the sun comes up, until the sun comes down. I used to work at a bakery, and it was extremely tough. The owner was a privately owned bakery, like a small little outfit in my hometown, and Sue Voss was her name. Single woman, and she worked her tush off night and day to barely, I was making $4 an hour. The main baker was probably making $10 an hour. But she worked her tail off to make this bakery successful. And we didn't have to deal with protesters out on the sidewalk for...
And a lot of times these small businesses have like one or two people working in there. So even if you feel threatened, there's no one to help
you. Yeah, it's horrible. So what I want to do is we're going to get the owners on, and I want to flood these folks with business. Me alone, I could put a dent and make, but apparently you can order their cookies online. I should give you the name of, did I give the name of the, Ali's Cookies?
Ali's Cookies, yeah.
A-L-I apostrophe, yes. So I want to show them some support because I know you folks listening, A, probably love cookies. As Deborah said, everyone loves cookies. But B, want to show support to this Israeli couple that's having to deal with these anti-Semitic actions at their place of business. It's very tough, especially all the small business owners out there. You know how difficult it is. And to add that onto, I can only imagine that they're probably losing business. So I want to drum up business. We're going to talk to the owners. Deborah, great job getting them on. They're going to be coming on in the 10 o'clock hour. I just want to highlight Allie's cookies. And we'll find out exactly what they've been dealing with, because it's just abhorrent. Absolutely abhorrent. There has been a terrorist attack in Russia. Did you see that, Deborah?
Yeah, it was on churches, right?
Yeah, yes. So it was... we'll get the story here. It was a murder... Like, people were murdered at churches and synagogues in Russia. Claire Sebastian is following the story out of London. Claire, this is obviously a horrible story. Do we know what happened just yet in this horrible attack in Russia?
Well, the details are still unfolding, but what they are confident in, Sarah, is that this was a set of coordinated attacks. What we see is that they happened really simultaneously in these two cities, Mahachkala, which is the regional capital in this predominantly Muslim region, Dagestan, and then Derbent, which is, you know, more than 100 kilometers, 80 miles away down the Caspian Sea coast. There's also, of course, the pattern that we see with these houses of worship being targeted, churches and synagogues in both cities. We know that it unfolded, or at least reports suggest that it started to unfold in the early evening, a summer evening, in this region. They used, according to initial reports, automatic weapons to fire on synagogues and churches. At one church in Mahachkala, we heard that some 19 people were sort of holed up in there as a shootout happened outside and were later brought to safety. And a priest was also killed an Orthodox priest in Derbent, according to one local official, gruesome details, by having his throat slit. So all of this, they are still sort of piecing together, but, you know, clearly Russia's investigative committee views this as terrorism. It's being investigated under the Terrorism Act.
This comes on the heel. Remember that massive terrorism attack just outside of Moscow at the theater?
Yeah, a couple months ago.
This is horrible. So 15 police officers were killed, including 4 civilians, including an Orthodox priest. This all happened in the Dagestan Republic, which is Russia's southernmost Dagestan province. So coordinated attacks at churches and synagogues. That's just phenomenally awful. Like, things couldn't get any worse right now in the Russia-Ukraine war. 3 years ago today, I don't know if you remember this. This was a story. This was a crazy story. Do you remember this?
There are over 100 units in that building. That's what is frightening us very badly right now. They sent the dogs in. We had no hits on the dogs, so there were no sounds.
Remember that high-rise collapse in Florida where the building just went... That was 3 years ago today. Peter King's following a story in Florida. He's going to join us live next on The Mark Arum Show.
Live.
So much going on this manic Monday. Welcome back, friends. Mark Arum and crew with you till noon. Coming up at 10, we're going live to Jerusalem, updating the breaking news. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in an interview today said, quote, the most intense phase of the war is over. The impact of the Israel-Hamas war being felt by a small business owner here in Metro Atlanta. Coming up in the 10 o'clock hour, we're going to talk to the owners, the Israeli owners of a cookie shop near Emory University that have been seeing a rise in anti-Semitic activity at their small business. But I played the audio. Deborah, you remember how shocked I was three years ago today?
I remember when the story came through and... Yeah, we were like, what happened and how?
It was one of the most stunning breaking news stories we've ever covered here on the station when that condo building just literally just collapsed. The face of it just fell off down in Florida, killing almost 100 people. Peter King from CBS Radio News joins us live in Florida. Peter, 3 years ago today, that was one of the most unbelievable stories we've ever covered here on the show.
Well, it's one of the most unbelievable stories I've ever covered up close and personal, and I was there right after it happened, Mark. Just a horrific day, 1:22 a.m. 3 years ago, the building just came down. 98 people were ultimately died in the rubble, in the wreckage. And there are still investigations going on as to exactly what happened.
Yeah, that was my next question. Have we found a cause, and what's the current situation with that condo? Because I know it's, you know, even up here in Atlanta, we have so many high-rise apartments. People were freaking out about what happened there.
Well, there is no current situation with the actual condo itself. It's now just a flat piece of land. Nothing has been rebuilt on there, and we don't know what the plans are going to be at this point because that's been in dispute. As far as the deficiencies, well, there were plenty that have been found in the investigation so far. Tower support columns, for example, were weak. There were problems with the steel reinforcement placements, concrete alignment, the strength of the columns and floor concrete, and several areas of the pool deck had several strength deficiencies. The pool deck was the first part to go, and then everything else just pancaked on top of it.
If anyone, most folks listening have been to, you know, some sort of coastal area in Florida, and you just see, you know, especially in southern Florida, just the beaches lined with these condominiums, right? People with the oceanfront views. In the aftermath of that, Peter, did the state of Florida do anything to really, you know, try to up the standards, that the building standards? Was there a microscope held on current high-rises to make sure that this tragedy didn't happen again?
Well, you have to remember that this building was in the neighborhood of 40 years old, and the standards were a whole lot different back then. And then came Hurricane Andrew, and building codes were strengthened right after that because Andrew just leveled everything in its path down in Homestead. What happened after the Surfside collapse was basically that they revised the inspection rules, whereas now, if a building is 30 years old, there has to be a milestone inspection every 10 years, at 30 years, excuse me, and then every 10 years after that, or every 10 years after, let me start that again, or every 10 years if the building is within 3 miles of the coastline on a 25-year-old building. So those inspections have been stepped up in the wake of Surfside, and that certainly is going to help. But, you know, for the older buildings, I think the lesson here is that you've got to be much more diligent in terms of looking for signs of trouble. We haven't had anything catastrophic since then, thankfully, but, you know, you have to absolutely have your eyes open and have those buildings inspected.
Yeah, it was stunning. I mean, my aunt and uncle live in one of those high rises down in Aventura, and I remember just calling them, be like, is your building okay? How old is your building? That was just horrible. Peter, while I got you, since you're also not only our amazing national correspondent, but you handle the sky as well. Talking about NASA-related topics. What's the latest on the folks that were stuck on the ISS? Are they going to get home anytime soon?
Okay, first of all, they are not stuck.
Oh, sorry. Delayed.
Oh, no, that's okay, because everybody seems to be reporting that because that makes for a really great headline. But they're not stuck there. They are there until engineers from Boeing and NASA take a full look at what's going on with those thrusters. Thruster rockets aboard the Boeing Starliner and get all the possible data they can before they have them come back down. Right now, that's scheduled for about the 2nd of July, which would be next week. And, you know, this is not totally unexpected because we kind of knew that even though they had a planned landing date when they launched, we were told right up front, hey, this they could be up there longer, not just because of this problem, but because of weather on the ground and other variables. The two astronauts, Butch Wilmore and Sonny Williams, are space station experienced in their previous space flights. So, you know, this is like extra time at their homes away from home. So it's not really a hardship on them. But, yeah, we're watching the Starliner situation very, very carefully. We've also been told that if there were an emergency and they had to get out and land, the spacecraft would be fine for them to do that. So we have to take that at face value because that's all we got.
Yeah, I'm so claustrophobic, Peter. I'd be freaking out. But I said to Deborah last week, they're probably loving it. They're like, yes, we get more time in the space station. They're probably ecstatic that they get an extra week or so.
They absolutely are. They love being in space. And keep in mind that it's been more than a decade since either of them were there. So, you know, they're very glad to be back and by all accounts are enjoying their stay.
Got it. Peter King, as always. Michelle Wright says to say hello to you, by the way.
You know what? I don't think this would violate an HR rule, but please tell Michelle Wright hello and give her a big hug for me. Well, one of my favorite people in the world.
Me too. We went to college together, Michelle and I.
Well, we were reporters in Orlando together.
Yeah, exactly.
You guys have one of the best in her.
Agreed. Peter, as always, thanks for your time, my friend.
All right, talk soon.
There you go, Peter King, CBS News. All right, when we come back, we still have more Supreme Court decisions to be heard. Thane Rosenbaum is going to break it down for us next on The Mark Arum Show.
This morning, the local authorities declared the anti-terrorist operation over and released the latest death toll. At least 15 policemen killed and 4 civilians, including a Russian Orthodox priest.
Unbelievably horrible story out of Russia. We'll continue to monitor that. Another big international story we're going to update after the news at 10. In case you're just joining us, in an interview today with Israel's TV station Channel 14, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said, quote, "The most intense phase of the war is over." What does that mean? We're going to go live to Robert Berger in Jerusalem after 10. And then following that, we're going to talk to two Israeli Americans that are here and own a small business. And they're feeling the effects of the anti-Semitic rise at their business in Emory Village. So that's coming up next hour, as is Eric Erickson updating campaign 2024 and previewing the presidential debate, which you'll hear live this Thursday on 95.5 WSB. This could be another week, Deborah. We are keeping our eyes on the Supreme Court. Supreme Court could release decisions in a number of high-profile cases. Pending decisions involve former President Trump's claims of immunity from criminal prosecution, the deadly Capitol attack by Trump supporters, Idaho's abortion ban, the rights of unhoused people or homeless people. Is it unhoused? Is that the?
I think that's the more appropriate term to say.
Well, that's going to take a while to change. Unhoused people. Federal regulation of ozone pollution and more. CBS News legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum following it all for us.
We are still awaiting the decision on presidential immunity to criminal prosecution and another case that has January 6 implications, both for Donald Trump and more than half of the rioters who were sentenced or pled guilty to crimes on that day. And there are several cases involving whether the federal or state government can impose content restrictions on social media companies.
Now, talking to Thane, it seems like we're going to see these big decisions come on Thursday. For whatever it is, Thursday's the party day for the Supreme Court justices. They like doing big announcements on Thursday, which is going to be horrible for us because that's the debate day. So we're going to be dealing with debate stuff and then the Supreme Court. But we've got Thane Rosenbaum. We've got legal analyst Phil Holloway at Disposable and WSB legal analyst Ron Carlson. So whatever happens with the Supreme Court, we got it done. I meant to play this, when Peter King was on, because we were talking about the Surfside story. Did you hear about the surfer who got killed in Hawaii?
The shark.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Surfing icon dead after a shark attack in Hawaii. Tamayo Perry was attacked Sunday off of Oahu. Kurt Lager is an acting ocean safety chief.
Loved by all. He's well known on the North Shore. He's a professional surfer, known worldwide around the world. Tamayo's personality was infectious, and as much as people loved him, he loved everyone else more.
So the 49-year-old's body was found near a beach, missing an arm and leg. First responders attempt to resuscitate him, but it was no use. Perry also worked as an actor. He was in Pirates of the Caribbean, Blue Crush. You remember the surfer movie Blue Crush?
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, Lost and a number of other productions. Now, that's tragic. That's horrible. But if you are a surfer, like that's
part of the job danger, right?
Well, I mean, is there more? I'm not saying he wanted to die.
Of course not. No.
But he died doing something he loved.
Oh, okay.
Right?
I see what you're saying. Sure. At least he went out enjoying himself.
Yeah. Like he wasn't hit by a bus. He wasn't walking down the street and an anvil fell on his head.
An anvil.
Like he was surfing. Like his whole life was surfing and he died doing what he loved. I think there's something kind of poetic about that. Again, he probably didn't want to die. It reminds me of Bodhi, the character in
Point Break.
Point Break. Right, they traced him down to
Australia.
Wave,
yeah, and they're going to have him let that final wave.
And Keanu's like, all right, go ahead, take the final. And he died. Like, that's how he wanted to die. So he probably didn't want to die.
With a shark attack,
yes. He died doing what he loved. For me, that would be, I guess, eating. I'd die.
Be choking on the air from food that you love.
A veal parm stuck in my throat. God forbid, I love doing radio. If I keel over, that's poetic. Sorting baseball cards.
You get a severe paper cut from a baseball card.
Oh, gosh. And then it gets gangrene or something. Yeah, anyway, that's if you're going to go as a surfer, that's the way to go. A couple of stories I wanted to update you, Deborah. I told this story a long time ago. I was taking Uber home for whatever reason, and the Uber driver kind of rolled through a stop sign, and there's a police officer, one of the 16 stop signs they put it near my old house, and she got pulled over. And I'm thinking, like, if this driver has an outstanding warrant or something, what's going to happen to me? If he impounds the car, arrests the driver, what's going to happen? And now I think he might have, he gave her a warning and we went on our way. But I think the police officer might have driven me home. Because Deborah found a story, police officer delivers DoorDash delivery after the delivery driver got arrested?
Yeah, so the driver had a warrant out for his arrest. The police noticed him and they pulled him over, but he was supposed to be doing his DoorDash deliveries at the time. So the people that were waiting noticed, okay, it's a really long time. Why haven't we got our food? The guy hasn't moved in an hour. And they were about to cancel when the police knocked on the door and said, oh, we brought your delivery to you since your driver can't do it. You know, he's like, this is our way of making sure the community's happy and safe, which
that's,
I think, is a pretty cool move.
Amazing. That's truly amazing. I love that. That didn't happen in Metro Atlanta.
No, this was out in Arizona.
Oh, that's fantastic. As someone that is on the receiving end of those food deliveries, I would be tickled if a police officer's like, we had to arrest your driver. Here's your pork fried rice and your egg rolls. I wonder if they tip the cop.
Oh, it doesn't say.
Because you can't. Oh,
they tip on the app, don't they?
I've got to apologize. Speaking of tipping. So I've been doing, I've cut my last lawn when I was 18 years old. So now at the new house, someone recommended
an app. A landscaper, yeah.
A landscaping app. And they always leave before I can tip them. And I'm like, maybe tipping's not allowed.
Tipping's allowed.
Well, I know, but they never say, hey, we're done. So I never get a chance to tip them. It's a different crew usually. And they came this weekend, and the kid was so nice. And I, for the first time ever in the app, I wanted to send him a message to be like, hey, great job on the lawn. And it was like, do you want to add a tip? I didn't know that function. So all the people that have been mowing my lawn for the last year and I haven't tipped you, I'm so sorry. I tried to go back to see if I could add tips after. Can't do it. So I don't think I am a jerk for not tipping. But I didn't know that was a functionality of the app. Anyway, if a police officer delivers your DoorDash, after he arrests the driver, go ahead and give him a tip. All right, we got breaking news out of Jerusalem. Benjamin Netanyahu says, quote, the most intense phase of the war is now over. Covering the story and joining us live from Jerusalem, Robert Berger joins us next on The Mark Arum Show. Welcome back to the show and a good Monday morning to you. Mark Arum here, you there. It's 10:05, 5 minutes after 10 o'clock. This is the Mark Arum Show live Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to noon on 95.5 WSB. The whole family with us today. Deborah Green, the executive producer of the show. Three Longorias on the other side of the takeout window. Sweet Pea Purnell screens your calls. Coming up in 30 minutes, Eric Erickson joins us live. Going to preview the big presidential debate here in Atlanta on Thursday. And we'll pick his brain on campaign 2024. Who will former President Trump pick to be his vice presidential running mate? In the meantime, though, we are continuing some breaking news. We brought you last hour on the show. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, in an interview with Israel's Channel 14, said, quote, the most intense phase of the war is now over. What does he mean by that? Joining us live from CBS Radio News in Jerusalem, it's Robert Berger. Robert, as always, thanks for your time.
Good to be with you, Mark.
So what do you make? I don't know if you saw the whole interview with Channel 14, but what do you make with the Prime Minister's declaration that the most intense phase of the war is now over?
You know, there were a lot of headlines in this interview, a very rare interview in Israeli media. So it seems that they're actually moving into the third phase, what's known as the third phase of the war in Gaza, with the offensive in Rafah, the southern city of Rafah, winding down. So that means the stage of intense bombings, of massive bombings, apparently is over, and Israel will move to more targeted strikes against Hamas and its infrastructure, such as those tunnels and weapons facilities.
Robert, you mentioned other headlines came out of the interview. Was there something that I missed or that wasn't reported yet here in the States?
Yeah, the whole thing about the ceasefire was a big headline because there's the U.S. Plan for a ceasefire. Some call it actually Netanyahu's plan, which is a three-phased deal to see the release of hostages and possibly end the war. At least that's how President Biden explained it a couple of weeks ago. But Netanyahu basically walking that back, saying that he's prepared for a partial ceasefire, which would see the release of some hostages, but that Israel is prepared to go back to war in order to defeat and destroy Hamas. So that's something that Hamas, of course, rejects, saying that the only way to get the hostages back is a permanent ceasefire, an Israeli withdrawal from Gaza, and an end to the war. So that was the other big headline.
In this interview, did the president reference, because we've been covering this here, the prime minister has been forcefully saying that the United States has delayed or stopped supplying certain types of arms to the Israeli army. The Biden administration is pushing back on that. Did he address that controversy? And if not, what is the latest and what's the reaction in Israel to that?
He actually addressed that earlier in the day at the cabinet meeting, saying that for the past 4 months, the United States has curtailed or cut back on weapon shipments to Israel. And this has become a public spat because when he said that previously, the White House shot back and said, well, we don't know what he's talking about. It started with the delay or the suspension of a shipment of 2,000-pound bombs that the U.S. didn't want Israel to use in Rafah, and also some 500-pound bombs. But now the tensions have been escalating in the north between Israel and Hezbollah in Lebanon, and Israel has been threatening to go and launch a massive assault on Lebanon, and it needs those heavy weapons. And according to Netanyahu, apparently there have been other weapons holdups, not confirmed by the U.S., but perhaps spare parts for war planes like F-16s and F-35s.
You mentioned Lebanon and Hezbollah, and since October 7th, I've kind of been on the edge of my seat to seeing what kind of a role that might play, if any, in this Israel-Hamas war. Because for folks that don't know, Hezbollah, Iranian-backed organization, they are much more well-equipped militarily than Hamas is. How big a threat is Hezbollah to Israel's north, and is that going to be phase two or the next phase of this war?
That's the big question, and it's being speculated a lot here. Over the past 3 weeks or so, Hezbollah has been stepping up attacks on northern Israel, on military sites, with drones and anti-tank missiles. 60,000 Israelis have actually, that live in northern Israel, have been evacuated from there pretty much since the start of the Gaza war on October 7th. So, that obviously can't go on. The people in northern Israel need to go back home, and so Israel is threatening to launch a big assault on Lebanon. The question is, how do you do that? Israel is threatening not only to strike at Hezbollah, but to strike at Lebanon itself, which is housing this militia, this Iranian-backed militia. such as bombing Beirut. That, of course, would be a huge escalation. Hezbollah has been threatening to use its massive arsenal. And then you would really see a much bigger, broader, more terrible war than what we've been seeing in the past 8 months.
Robert Berger, CBS News in Jerusalem. Robert, thanks for jumping on with short notice to talk about that breaking news today from the Prime Minister.
Sure. Thanks, Mark.
Appreciate it, buddy. The impact of the Israel-Hamas war being felt here in Metro Atlanta by a small business owner. How the pro-Palestinian protests and anti-Semitic activity are impacting their small business. We'll talk to the owners of that business live next on The Mark Arum Show. 10:17 on The Mark Arum Show. Coming up after the news at 10:30, Eric Erickson joins us live. Going to talk campaign 2024, the big presidential debate here live in Atlanta on Thursday, which you, of course, can hear on 95.5 WSB. And continuing our team coverage of the Israel-Hamas war, we just spoke with Robert Berger in Jerusalem, updating the comments today made by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. But the Israel-Hamas war not just impacting Israel and the Gaza Strip, but also us here locally in Atlanta. In fact, from Jerusalem to Emory Village we go now. Joining us live on the Mark Arum Show, it's Nafar Shabli. Nafar, good morning. Thanks for your time.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me.
So I read this story in Rough Draft Atlanta talking about your small business. You own Allie's Cookie Cookies in Emory Village, and you are from Israel, correct?
Yes, my family and I arrived here about 2.5 years ago.
And how did you wind up in the cookie business? Have you always been a baker?
Well, it's always been a hobby. And, you know, with our experience and hobbies, it's something that meant to be. So it was pretty much a good fit for us.
So you decided to open this bakery called Allie's Cookies in Emory Village 2.5 years ago. And I'm assuming, you know, it's been successful, right? Everybody loves cookies, and I'm sure the Emory students always want cookies. How has your business changed after the Hamas terrorist attack on October 7th? And what's been going on recently at your store?
So ever since October 7th, the Black Saturday, as we call it, what happened in Israel, we've decided to put the Israeli flag on the TV at our store to support Israel. And in the beginning, the sales went down and we didn't realize why. And then people started to come in and said, you support genocide, you're murderers, we're not going to buy here anymore. There were a few people that tried to tear off the flag in the front of the store, and eventually they succeeded, so we needed to change it. A few people were drawing the Palestinian flag over the tables, people pulling away other people and say, don't buy here. People call and say horrible things. One person called and said that he will burn us and burn our store. We're experiencing anti-Semitism ever since then, and it's getting worse, and we've been experiencing vandalism and threats, and someone sent us a postcard with Anne Frank on the front and horrible things on the back, like guess the Jews.
Obviously that's horrible. But not only as a business owner, this impacted your business, but as a person, as an Israeli, and seeing these anti-Semitic acts, how is that making you feel? Because you come to the United States of America, freedom of religion, and then you have to experience these terrible things. How does it make you feel as a person?
Well, we feel horrible about it, and there are not really enough words to express how we feel. A person came in a few days ago with a book with a swastika on it, and another person was drawing a swastika and tried to cover our camera with paint. It's hard, especially when you come from Israel. And as a Jew, it's really hard. And we love America. We know that those people are not the American people. We know it's a small group of people. They have that impact. apparently. But it's just a small group of people, and we're strong, and we're here to stay because we love America. And, you know, we will continue to do what we're doing. And, yes, it's hard, and, yes, it's getting worse ever since the time goes. But that's what we're doing, and we will continue to do it.
Talking to Nofar Shabli, owner of Ali's Cookies, live on the Mark Arum Show. Have you been in contact with the authorities? Have you been reporting these anti-Semitic acts?
Yes, of course, a lot, with the police and the FBI and with all kind of organizations, you know, but I guess that the things that they can do, they have like a limit access or limit things that they can do that, you know, you can't catch them all.
Have you had to increase security, or have you had employees that just decided they can't work there anymore because of the intense pressure? What's it been like on the business side of things?
Well, most of the times people just come in and say not nice things, but no one tried to do something, you know, more drastic than that, and I hope it will remain that way. But when you call the police, they just come, and that's fine. And we feel safe. So that's okay.
Gotcha. Now let's talk the bottom line. Since October 7th and since these protesters started, doing various, horrible things, at your store, in front of your store, what's been the bottom line at Ali's Cookies? How much is business down?
More than 50%.
More than 50. And I have friends that are small business owners. Is that sustainable with profits down, sales down 50%? How long can you keep going and keep the store open?
Yeah. We're dealing with that. And as I said, we're strong. So we have our faith and the belief that everything will go away eventually, and we will get through it. It's just, I guess, a big bump on the road, but we're here to stay, so it won't break us.
Well, I know it won't break you, and I'm going to make sure it doesn't. So before I do what I'm about to do, tell the folks about Ali's Cookies. What do you guys sell? What do you specialize in?
So everyone loves cookies, right? So are we. So we have cookies, and we have gluten-free cookies and vegan cookies and cookie cakes and ice cream and coffee, and we made everything from scratch, and that's who we are.
All right, but forget vegan and all those cookies. You have real cookies too, right? You have delicious cookies with sugar and eggs and all that stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Do you deliver? Can people order online? What kind of setup do you have?
So we have a website. AliceCookiesAmory.com, and we also ship out of the state. So if you're not living in our area, so we can ship it to you. All you need to do is send an email to info@AliceCookiesAmory.com, or call the store, and I will give you a call back.
All right. Here's the deal, Ali.
Yeah.
Ali, no far. Sorry.
happens.
You're going to have to hire some help, because personally, I am about to order a blank ton of cookies. And I know the WSB radio listeners are about to order a bunch of cookies. So you're going to have to hire extra staff, because it's just simply horrible that your business has been suffering because of this. So it's A-L-I-S, AliceCookiesEmory.com. I'm going to put the link on all of my social media accounts at Mark Arum. And you're going to see how much the listeners of WSB Radio support you and how much they love cookies, because we're about to bust your doors wide open with orders, my friend.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. And listen, I'm going to keep your contact info. I know the boss usually doesn't like us doing remote broadcasts, but would you be open to have me do my show at the cookie shop one day?
Of course. You're more than welcome.
All right. Nofar, stay strong. We got your back, buddy.
Thank you so much.
There you go. Nofar Shabli from Ali's Cookie Emery. During the break, I'm going to, on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook, I'm going to blast out their website and order them cookies, because I'm about to order them cookies. News, weather, and traffic 3 minutes away. We'll come back. Eric Erickson joins us live next, updating campaign 2024, only here on the Mark Arum Show.
Arum Show is performed before a live studio audience.
10:37 on this very busy Monday. Welcome back, friends. Mark Arum and crew with you till noon. As promised during the break, I tweeted out the link to Allie's Cookies Emery to help support the bake shop near Emery Village that has lost 50% of their business because of pro-Palestinian supporters and the anti-Semitic activities going on inside and outside their shop. It's Allie'sCookiesEmery.com. I tweeted out the link, and I know my buddy Eric Erickson is going to retweet me to his 9 billion Twitter followers to help support this Israeli-owned business. Eric, good morning, my friend. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
One of your staff does the tweeting?
I'm doing it myself right now.
Love
it. This is what a crazy story. Good gracious.
Unbelievable. Oh, thank you for doing that, Eric. And I know you love cookies as much as I do. So we're going to try to throw them as much support as we can. Let's start, though. Thursday, big debate here down the street in Atlanta at CNN. It's Biden versus Trump. You're going to hear it live on WSB Radio. Getting reports out of both camps on the debate prep. What's going on inside the debate prep for both of these candidates?
So, you know, they've got Biden down the White House saying he's not coming back to the White House. Essentially, they are behind the scenes privately saying they're trying to get his sleep schedule better aligned so he can be up later. They're going through real debate prep with him, trying to make sure he doesn't lose his temper on stage. With Trump, he's not doing formal debate prep like Biden. He is actually just taking some policy positions and having policy discussions. So that's the way he likes to do it. One thing everyone has been told, whether it's Maggie Haberman at the New York Times or even the folks at Fox News, is that Donald Trump does recognize in 2020 he interrupted Joe Biden nonstop. And in addition to not having a microphone on this time, he knows he needs to not do that.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I going back to the previous campaigns, wasn't Chris Christie like the debate guru for Trump? Wasn't he
yes.
the guy that prepped? I'm assuming we're not getting a repeat of that.
Not getting that. He did it in 2016 and he did it in 2020. It's not going to happen this time. And he's just doing a more informal debate. And of course, they're trying to rough the ref, so to speak, attacking Jake Tapper and Dana Bash for bias against him, things like that. So it's going to be interesting to see. And by the way, can I say, and you've probably already mentioned this, but also what a disaster for everyone in Atlanta to have the men's Olympic soccer team, Lionel Messi, and two presidents in the city at the same time.
Yes, a reminder to keep it locked for continuous traffic updates here on 95.5.
It's going to be a disaster.
WSB. All right, so, you know, for 18 months we've been hearing the Trump campaign, for right or wrong, bashing the cognitive skills of President Biden. And now we're seeing kind of reversal, trying to raise the bar of expectations for the president on the stage. Good strategy to say, all right, listen, no, Biden's an accomplished debater. He's going to be fine. Is that a good strategy?
You know, it's the best they've got. Both sides do this, trying to say, oh, the other guy's got the advantage. I think we've got two 80-year-olds on a debate stage at 9 o'clock. I mean, the expectations for Biden are if he doesn't have a senior moment or fall off stage, he probably does okay. Donald Trump's just got to be able to respond to the inevitable stolen election questions without losing his temper.
I saw reporting this weekend that former President Trump said that he's made his decision on who his vice president will be. That vice president will be at the debate in Atlanta. Are we going to get a big reveal Thursday?
You know, we might. There's a lot of speculation on that. And, of course, there's lots of speculation on is it going to be J.D. Vance? His name keeps circulating a lot. Marco Rubio has been coming up a lot with a lobbying campaign on Rubio's behalf. I honestly have no idea. It's a very great secret. But, you know, all of the supposed surrogates who could be vice president are going to be there.
So there is, because there's no audience, but each campaign, I guess, will have a number of surrogates that will be invited to at least watch the debate, I guess?
Yeah, they'll watch, and they'll be in after the debate is over, they'll be trying to explain how their side won and the other side lost.
Interesting. I heard also reported that Ben Carson might be the front runner now. That seems to me, again, I'm not an insider like you, but that seems to me like an unlikely choice.
Yeah, it is very much an unlikely choice. I wouldn't hold my breath on that. He's got a lot of supporters who like him, but yeah, that's not going to happen.
Byron Donalds, I saw him this morning on CNN. What are the chances? I mean, he's really solid. Like, is he the right pick? If you were inside the Trump campaign, who would you tell the former president to take as his running mate?
Honestly, you've got youth and you excite a certain core of the right with J.D. Vance. I'm biased towards Tim Scott in that I do think having a younger black man, given the way young black votes are going for Donald Trump, would help him more so than Byron Donalds, because Tim Scott is a senator instead of just a congressman. You campaign differently statewide versus in a district. Marco Rubio has a shot, although I have a hard time believing that one because of Donald Trump, clear hostility towards him even when he was president. But that might have changed. You could certainly lock in Florida, get the Hispanic vote with Marco Rubio.
I'm still on board with Stefanik from New York. I think she would be a perfect choice for him. A female vice president, a staunch ally.
Oh, okay, I'm going to get myself in trouble here. Listen, this isn't me. Don't shoot the messenger. I'm just saying, I had this conversation the other day with someone very close to Donald Trump who said, yeah, but there's an appearance issue.
Yeah, I'm not shooting you. That seems all right. I'm gonna Deborah call Vegas, pull my bets off of, because what she did in Congress to the presidents of those universities.
You're absolutely right. I don't disagree with you. And as it was said rather bluntly, if she
I get it.
Appearance, she'd probably be the front runner.
We all understand.
Trying to be polite.
Yeah, exactly. No, I appreciate the politeness there. All right, so the debate obviously here on Thursday in Atlanta, you're going to hear it live on WSB Radio. What kind of special coverage pre and post debate are we going to have on the Eric Erickson Show?
You know, I will be in the run-up to it, covering just the different strategies for the debates and also a look back on the presidential debates. You know, historically, presidents of the United States, incumbents, tend to have the worst first debate, which is something the Biden team has to be mindful of. Ronald Reagan in 84, Donald Trump in 2020, they tend to have terrible first debates.
Raphael Warnock. I mean, not presidential debate, but he had a horrible debate, the first debate with Herschel Walker.
Yeah, he did. And it's just something, the incumbency makes you a little bit more guarded. And also you think you've got it until you don't. And your second debate, you come back strong.
There you go. Eric Erickson. Hey, thanks for joining us. Thanks for retweeting me, buddy. And I'll listen to you live on my way home, noon to three here.
Thank you, sir.
There you go. Eric Erickson, host of the award-winning, nationally syndicated Eric Erickson Show. Got you covered, soup to nuts, on campaign 2024. We'll be right back. It's the Mark Arum Show on 95.5 WSB. Go hit my social media. Buy some cookies from Allie's at Mark Arum, MarkArum. Happy 77th birthday, Mick Fleetwood, drummer and co-founder of Fleetwood Mac, born 77 years ago today, 1947. Deborah, your take as official musical correspondent of
about Mick Fleetwood. Mick Fleetwood. Yeah. Have you ever seen Mick Fleetwood? He's like the tallest person ever.
Really?
Yeah, he's super tall. One of my favorite bands there. I love Fleetwood Mac. I've seen them every time they roll through town.
Speaking of concerts, you went to the show on Friday.
The Outlaw Music Festival.
The Outlaw and No Willie. Willie Nelson had to
bail. Like right before, a couple hours before the show, that he posted on social media that he canceled his tour, and everybody was freaking out thinking it was the entire tour.
Yeah.
And he's just missing a couple days because he was sick.
Nah, that's sad.
He'll be back in like 3 or 4
days.
But
the rest of the show was good.
Yeah, I went to see Robert Plant, and
sure,
I was happy with
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, official musical correspondent. So the story I'm about to talk about right now, it directly impacts the music industry. Mick Fleetwood, Willie Nelson, Robert Plant. I firmly believe that in order to get the greatest art out of artists, whether it's musicians, sculptors, painters, whomever, the greatest art comes from heartbreak. If you have a broken heart, everyone here's had a broken heart except for Longoria, because he's always the heartbreaker. But you've had your heart broken, Deborah, yeah?
Of course. Yeah. Every girl's had their heart broken.
And
yes.
That pain of heartbreak enables you to create things you never would have been able to create before. I firmly believe that. Mick Fleetwood's greatest songs, Willie Nelson's greatest songs.
I mean, you can look at Taylor Swift and Stevie Nicks,
there
right?
There you go.
Whether you like the stories or not, they all come from a really emotional spot.
So as tough as heartbreak is, it can inspire some of the greatest things you will ever do in your life. I personally believe that. The times I've had to deal with heartbreak, and not just romantic, but,
no,
you know,
like when you lost your pet.
Exactly.
That was awful.
Yeah, but for whatever it is, what happens in your brain when you're heartbroken, it either removes barriers, it opens new channels, whatever. You can do some of the best creative thinking in your life. That being said, modern medicine is coming up with a way to numb heartache. Kind of like that movie, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Do you remember that movie with Jim Carrey?
Kate Winslet.
And Kate Winslet. Yeah. She breaks up with him. He's heartbroken. So he goes to a doctor to erase every memory of him out of his brain. It was actually a really good movie. This is becoming a thing. What's going on with this?
Well, so technically a broken heart clinically is known as love trauma syndrome.
Okay.
Right? And so scientists are realizing how to get over this because it's very emotional. It causes depression, anxiety with a lot of people. So they are realizing they can send electric currents to your brain.
Zap your brain.
Basically electrocute you. And these pulses, when you do them for 20 minutes over 5 days, ease heartbreak. Now, I don't know if it's easing heartbreak or you just don't want to be zapped anymore, but that's what scientists are looking at. They're calling them these pulses that you can undergo, and it's supposed to make you hurt a little bit less.
I have no more future heartbreaks, but I'm going to say no to getting my brains. But it doesn't erase your memory.
No, it's just supposed to dull the pain.
Yeah, don't do it. God forbid you ever have your heart broken. Embrace it because you can do some amazing stuff. There's a comedian, gosh, I forget his name, but he basically similar to what I'm saying is he said every great invention made by a man, not that all inventions are, but every male that has invented something was to do it to impress women. And he,
I can see that.
He has a bit like Thomas Edison was like, oh, I invented the light bulb. He goes, and wait till the ladies see it. Like everything men do is to garner favor with women. Anyway, all right, good stuff, Deborah. Updating former President Trump. This is curious. This is Katrina Kaufman outside a courthouse in Fort Pierce, Florida. Hearing today involving the former president and how he held on to some classified documents.
Trump is saying that rather than being paid out of the Department of Justice's ordinary budget, Smith is being paid out of what's called a permanent indefinite appropriation. This is something that was set up years ago to pay for independent counsels, but the specific act that it was established under actually expired in 1999. So Trump says that Smith should not be paid in this way. He doesn't qualify as an independent counsel, and this no longer exists as a premise for it.
Katrina Kaufman reporting on railroad tracks outside the courthouse in Fort Pierce, Florida. So we're going to monitor that situation in the court today and throughout the week. I don't think it's going to happen today, most likely on Thursday. We're going to hear from the Supreme Court again. Again, the big case we're waiting to hear is going to be the presidential immunity case involving former President Trump. Whenever the Supreme Court decides to stop dragging their feet and give us that decision, we'll bring it to you live here on 95.5 WSB. One lighthearted story before we hit some heavy stuff. It's been 37 years since Spaceballs hit theaters. Apparently, there's a Spaceballs Star Wars parody coming back to the big screen.
And may the Schwartz be with you.
It's been 37 years since Spaceballs hit theaters, but Amazon MGM Studios confirms it's working on a sequel. It'll be produced by Mel Brooks and Josh Gad, who will also have a starring role.
We were told to comb the desert, so we're combing it.
Found anything yet? Nothing yet, sir!
The original became a cult classic in 1987, starring the likes of Rick Moranis and John Candy.
Who are you?
Barf!
Not in here, mister. This is a Mercedes.
The sequel's still in early production, but Gad said on Instagram it may be the funniest and best thing he's ever worked on. Monica Ricks, CBS News.
I love Spaceballs so much, and I'm always worried about sequels. But the fact that Mel Brooks is doing it,
Josh
makes me
Gad's
feel
funny.
And Josh Gad, yeah. I hope Rick Moranis is in it. John Candy,
he's
rest
not.
In peace. Oh, he's
Maybe
not?
Maybe Michael Winslow will come back and do his little noises.
We ain't found. I say that at least once a week. We ain't found. Sabrina's got your news, weather, and traffic. When we come back, we're going to go live to Atlanta's Hartsfield-Jackson Airport, bracing for a huge July 4th rush. We'll give you the details live next on The Mark Arum Show.
No, I'll run this town to be near you.
11:05 on what's turning out to be a scorcher here in Metro Atlanta. Welcome back to the Mark Arum Show at your beck and call till noon. Coming up in 30 minutes, I'm going to replay part of our interview we had last hour on the show with Nafar Shabli. She's the owner of Ali's Cookies, Emery Village. She's lost 50% of her business because of them being Israeli and pro-Palestinian protesters, and they've gone through some vile, vile stuff. I really want to support this local small business that has been dealing with just a horrid situation. I've got the website to order cookies. I'm going to do it after the show because I'm going to have sit down with Longoria and we're going to map out.
Have you seen all the different types of cookies?
I know. I mean, we're about to get really fat here at WSB Radio because I'm about to order a bunch of cookies and I want you to do the same, please. I tweeted the link and posted it on my social medias at Mark Arum, M-A-R-K-A-R-U-M. It's kind of like a ghost town here in the station right now. Everyone's on summer vacation. No less than 15 of my Facebook friends are in Europe right now. There's a story in the Washington, the Wall Street Journal about Americans going to Europe right now. And I'm going to talk about that in just a second. But speaking of travel, joining us live from the world's busiest airport, it's our buddy Andrew Gobiel. Andrew, good morning. How are you, buddy?
Mark, good morning. And why am I sitting here at my desk when I could be traveling through Europe?
You should be. I mean, people that I went to college with that have never left the tri-state area. My buddy, Jack McTee, he's a police officer in New Jersey. The guy doesn't travel. He came to Atlanta once. He's at the Colosseum in Rome. It's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, people are, I guess, the money, the dollar goes further in Europe. Anyway, you don't want to talk about that, Andrew. You want to give us a heads up.
As long as they're connecting through Atlanta or departing from Atlanta, sure, that'll be fine.
Everything goes through Atlanta, my friend. And as we ramp up for the July 4th holiday, some new expectations, some new numbers you guys predict on how many passengers will head through the world's busiest airport.
Yeah, it is going to be busy. I mean, it's always busy, but we expect to see almost 4 million passengers traveling through starting this Thursday through Monday, July 8th. Now, this is a longer than normal period because the holiday itself is in the middle of the week. It's on a Thursday. So we're counting both weekends leading up to that and the day on each side of those. So these numbers, trying to compare them to past figures, which are right on the weekends, are a little bit higher. But again, we expect that more people will be traveling through the entire week or week and a half period.
What advice, I mean, since it's a longer stretched out period now, is the same advice still valid? How early you should get down there, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah. So again, the travel for people coming through Atlanta or departing from Hartsfield-Jackson begins before you depart. Go to the website, ATL.com, figure out where you're going to park. Figure out which concessions you're going to use. Figure out where your gate is. Mark, what's the saying that we use all the time? The best traveler is the well-prepared traveler, somebody who knows where they're going. And the other challenge, too, is that we focus frequently on the business travelers, people who are the road warriors who come here, you know, every week. They know what's going on. They can do it in their sleep. During the summer period, during the summer months, we have a lot of leisure travelers who come to the world's busiest airport, and they look around and they think, my goodness, where am I going? What's going on? So check out the website, ATL.com. Make a plan. Know what's happening.
I've got it set as my favorite, by the way, ATL.com. Just for the up-to-minute security wait lines, I love that feature on ATL.com. So you can know, all right, the shortest line is at the north checkpoint or the main checkpoint. I love that feature.
Well, thank you. And it's something that we work hard at and making sure that we update, and it is up to the minute. So it's live. When you take a look at it, it may be, I think, maybe a minute or 2 minutes behind. But when you get here, you know which line to go to and where to follow through. Keep in mind also that we've got those bright green coated customer service agents.
Yes.
Ask them. Ask any of the employees here at ATL. That's what we've been taught, to walk around and, you know, you see people walking through and they have kind of a blank look in their face and they can be overwhelmed. So it's our job to walk up and say, hey, look, you know, I work here. Can I help you? With a smile, and we want to be pleasant and let people know what's going on. But back to your question a moment ago, if you're flying domestically, get here in the airport at least 2 to 2.5 hours prior to your departure. That will make sure that you know where you're parking. You'll get on through. If there are issues, if there are any concerns, they'll be addressed. And if you get through within 15, 20 minutes, just head on out to the concourses and sit down and have a coffee or an adult beverage or buy something on out there and relax and enjoy.
Andy Gobiel from Atlanta's Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport joining us live on the Mark Arum Show. Before we get to the July 4th rush, this Thursday, kind of a big deal here in Metro Atlanta. We've got the first presidential debate, so we're going to be dealing with motorcades. We've got soccer fans coming to town. Do you guys expect any impact on what's going on at Hartsfield with this busy Thursday we're looking at?
Yeah, we always see that. And I don't know how many times I live right in the city. And if I leave work and we have the vice president or the president or a VIP where they shut down the roadways, you know, we get impacted by that. So be aware. Listen to the traffic updates. You guys are fantastic to let people know what's going on and what the process is. When we host these events, Atlanta is no slouch. So we're used to this, but even this Thursday with COPA going on, with the presidential debate going on, you know, there could be impacts across the city and across the region. So just be aware and be informed. Again, check out WSB's website, listen to what they're doing with their traffic updates, and check out our website and our social media channels at ATL Airport, where we provide updates up to the minute as to whatever is going on and impacting operations here at the airport.
Yeah, I've been to the airport 1,000 times, Andy, but I've never been there when Air Force One lands. Do the regular passengers going through the airport, does that impact them at all when the president lands Air Force One at the world's busiest?
No, I don't want to give out what we call SSI or, you know, security information.
Sure.
We don't want to share too much information about that, but we've got an area where they go, where they land, where they process through. And because we're so used to this, you know, we maintain operations while everything is going on. We may close portions of the airfield down from time to time when this is taking place. But, you know, the president is not going to be traveling through Concourse D. You know,
he's not stopping at the Popeyes in Concourse B.
He's not stopping at the Popeyes or the Varsity, but, you know, maybe he'll stop after the debate.
I got to tell you we're spoiled here in Atlanta. Every time I go to an airport that's not Hartsfield-Jackson International, I realize how lucky I am. I had the worst experience at the airport in the Bahamas, Andy. I mean, it just shows how buttoned up and how, you know, you guys just know what you're doing, and the efficiency is amazing. And you go to another airport and you're like, oh my God, I'm in 3 hours in this customs line. What is going on? Just take me back to Hartsfield.
Well, and you know what? And as my role, you know, we have to monitor social media. We update what's going on. And we recognize that on social media, it can get ugly once in a while. So we try to be out ahead of the story. We'll talk about what's going on. If there are challenges, we'll let everybody know. I mean, Mark, how many times have you called us and called me? And we're transparent as possible, and we want to make sure everyone is aware of what's happening. And it's easy for us because we've got a great story to tell. We are busy. We contribute $66 billion a year to the state. And we are very, very efficient. I absolutely love this job. I mean, it's so easy to tell a great story about ATL.
Yeah, and my parents went with us to the Bahamas. They flew through Atlanta out of Connecticut, and they had a great experience. But my mom said, where is your picture with the ATL? This is my airport shirt. And I was like, you know what? Andy's still working on that, Mom. He's still working on it.
I'll see what I can do for you, Mark.
Go.
I promise.
Andy Gobiel, Atlanta's Hartsfield-Jackson. Hey, thanks for joining us as always. Good luck this Thursday with all the events going on in Atlanta, and good luck in the busy July 4th travel season, buddy.
Thank you very much. Anytime, Mark.
There you go, Andy. I've got to get one of those. This is my airport T-shirt posters up at the airport. I'll be a failure in my mom's eyes until that happens. When we come back, speaking of the debate, we're going to update Thursday's debate here in Atlanta next on 95.5 WSB. Monica and the traffic team will have your back Thursday. Busy travel day. We're going to have the presidential debate here down the street at CNN. Some sort of soccer event. I'm not exactly sure.
Copa America's happening.
Mini World Cup. So the traffic team will be at your service. They're always at your service 24/7 here. Atlanta's only 24-hour traffic center. Speaking of travel, so I mentioned the story we had Andy on from the Hartsfield-Jackson Airport area. And I read this story in the Wall Street Journal. So post-COVID-19, you talked about this, Deborah, revenge travel. right? We were locked down for so long, we couldn't travel anywhere. People started really going at it after COVID. So much so that, again, 15 of my friends on Facebook were all in Europe in the last week. Silky was there. A couple of coworkers have been there. It's crazy. People that you would think would never travel, they're going to Europe right now. And it's unbelievable what we're spending in Europe. So Europe, especially Southern Europe, is seeing the biggest benefit. Though it's just home to 5% of the world's population, the European Union received one-third of all international tourist dollars last year, more than a half trillion dollars. You're nodding your head in agreement.
I mean, we've been to Southern Europe. We've been to Italy. I mean, if you look at the places around the Mediterranean, Greece and stuff like that, who doesn't want to go and spend money there?
By comparison, so $500 billion in Southern Europe. The United States, as a whole, the whole country, $150 billion. And we're a pretty big tourist destination, right? People from all over the world want to come to New York City or L.A. or Vegas or
Disney.
That's insane. And I guess the dollars is pretty strong in Europe right now. But, yeah. I have no plans to go to Europe anytime soon. I guess I'm missing the boat. I just thought that was a fascinating story. All right, updating the presidential debate again this Thursday. First presidential debate between the two likely nominees. Again, they're not even officially the nominees yet. They're the presumptive nominees. Biden's rehearsing and preparing with advisors at Camp David. Former President Trump spent the weekend campaigning, including a rally in Philadelphia. CBS News chief election and campaign correspondent Robert Costa explains more on the Supreme Court decision that could have an impact on the election.
It will matter so much politically because of the calendar. If the Supreme Court allows these trials on January 6th for Trump on classified records to go forward, saying the president, the former one, Donald Trump, is not immune from prosecution, that will change this entire campaign. Imagine two more major trials this year. But if the Supreme Court kicks it down to a lower court, those trials might never happen. Trump might never face trial again before voters go to the polls.
Most likely to hear that decision Thursday from the Supreme Court on the day of the debate. Updating campaign 2024, North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum defending his claim that the U.S. has become a dictatorship under President Biden. Scott Carr has the latest.
Burgum tells CNN State of the Union President Biden has bypassed Congress dozens of times to push his agenda through the signing of executive orders.
This president, more like any other, has bypassed Congress. He is bypassing the other two branches of government to push an ideological view.
Burgum has been comparing Biden's tenure to a dictatorship as he campaigns on behalf of former President Trump. The Republican is considered to be on Trump's short list for vice president. To date, records from the Federal Register and the National Archives show President Biden has issued 139 executive orders and that President Trump, during his 4 years in office, signed 220. I'm Scott Carr in Washington.
Interesting. When we had Erickson on last hour talking about who is going to be the vice president, he didn't mention Burgum's name. And he is supposedly on that short list. Here's one thing that both Biden and Trump can look forward to. Eventually, I think both will be on United States postage stamps.
You think so?
I think former presidents, no?
I don't think all presidents. No, I feel like Lyndon Johnson doesn't have a stamp, does
I bet he?
He
did at one point.
Grover Cleveland had one?
I think so.
Well, Taft had a stamp?
You'll fact check me during the break, but before you can get on a U.S. postage stamp, you have to pass away. So you can't
Yeah, you
do
can't
it while
be a living person.
But I'm assuming that Obama, Trump, and Biden will eventually be on stamps. Who else is on a stamp now, Deborah Green? This is a new one that just came out.
This one's cool. I'll be excited to get this one. The newest stamp is going to feature Alex Trebek from Jeopardy.
Who's not even American. He's Canadian.
He became a naturalized citizen.
Oh, yeah. For sure. Yeah, no, yeah. I think that's very cool.
But who didn't love Alex Trebek in Jeopardy?
Yeah.
I mean, he did a bunch of other game shows, too. But, I mean, Jeopardy was the best.
Do you think Alex Trebek, when rest in peace, he never thought, oh, I'm going to be on a U.S. postage stamp. I think that's very cool.
I wonder if Canada had put him on a stamp already. Because do you think they'd be like, oh, they beat us?
Probably. That's going to cause a trade war now because we're going to. I think that's cool. They're not out yet, are they? I went to the post office.
No, they won't be out for another month.
On Thursday or Friday, I don't know if it was new stamp release day, but there were like 14 octogenarians in line in front of me at the post office just buying new stamps.
They're about to raise the price again, so they're probably trying to get in.
They're on fixed incomes. That makes sense. All right, Sabrina's standing by with news, weather, and traffic. When we come back, I'm going to replay part of my interview with a local woman Nafarsha Blee. She owns Ali's Cookies in Emery Village. She's lost 50% of her business since the Israel-Hamas war. We're going to play that for you next on the Mark Arum Show.
He packed in animals two by two.
Ox, a camel, and a kangaroo. 11:37 on this steamy Monday. 88 degrees in Midtown. The heat is coming and coming and coming. Brad Nitz will have your full forecast at noon. Speaking of Nitz, nice picture of me and Brad and some other Channel 2 folks up on my Instagram account. If you get a second, check out my Instagram account at Mark Arum. And check out all my social medias because I posted a link to Ali's Cookies Emery. And I really want you to go out there and support them and buy a lot of cookies. Nafarsha Blee is the owner, one of the owners of Ali's Cookies in Emery Village. And since October 7th, the shop has been facing a lot of anti-Semitic backlash because the owners are Israeli. Nafar joining us on the Mark Arum Show. Nafar, have you always been a baker or you just love cookies?
Well, it's always been a hobby. You know, with our experience and hobbies, it's something that's meant to be. So it was pretty much a good fit for us.
So you decided to open this bakery called Ali's Cookies in Emery Village 2.5 years ago. And I'm assuming, you know, it's been successful, right? Everybody loves cookies, and I'm sure the Emory students always want cookies. How has your business changed after the Hamas terrorist attack on October 7th, and what's been going on recently at your store?
So ever since October 7th, the Black Saturday, as we call it, what happened in Israel, we've decided to put the Israeli flag on the TV at our store to support Israel. And in the beginning, the sales went down, and we didn't realize why. And then people started to come in and said, you support genocide, you're murderers, we're not going to buy here anymore. There were a few people that tried to tear off the flag in the front of the store, and eventually they succeeded, so we needed to change it. A few people were drawing the Palestinian flag over the tables, people pulling away other people and say, don't buy here. People call and say horrible things. One person called and said that he will burn us and burn our store. We're experiencing anti-Semitism ever since then, and it's getting worse, and we've been experiencing vandalism and threats, and someone sent us a postcard with Anne Frank on the front and horrible things on the back, like, guess the Jews.
Obviously that's horrible. But not only as a business owner, it's impacted your business, but as a person, as an Israeli, and seeing these anti-Semitic acts, how is that making you feel? Because you come to United States of America, freedom of religion, and then you have to experience these terrible things. How does it make you feel as a person?
Well, we feel horrible about it, and there are not really enough words to express how we feel. A person came in a few days ago with a book with a swastika on it, and another person was drawing a swastika and tried to cover our camera with a paint. It's hard, especially when you come from Israel. And as a Jew, it's really hard. And we love America. We know that those people are not the American people. We know it's a small group of people. They have that impact, apparently. But it's just a small group of people. And we're strong. And we're here to stay because we love America. And, you know, we will continue to do what we're doing. And yes, it's hard. And yes, it's getting worse ever since the time goes. But that's what we're doing. And we will continue to do it.
Talking to Nafarsha Blee, owner of Ali's Cookies, live on the Mark Arum Show. Have you been in contact with the authorities? Have you been reporting these anti-Semitic acts?
Yes, of course, a lot. With the police and the FBI, and with all kind of organizations, You know, but I guess that the things that they can do, they have like a limit access or limit things that they can do that, you know, you can't catch them all.
Have you had to increase security, or have you had employees that just decided they can't work there anymore because of the intense pressure? What's it been like on the business side of things?
Well, most of the times people just come in and say not nice things, but no one tried to do something, you know, more drastic than that, and I hope it will remain that way. But when you call the police, they just come, and that's fine, and we feel safe, so that's okay.
Gotcha. Now, let's talk the bottom line. Since October 7th and since these protesters started, you know, doing various horrible things, you know, at your store, in front of your store, what's been the bottom line at Ally's Cookies? How much is business down?
More than 50%.
And I have friends that are small business owners. Is that sustainable with profits down, sales down 50%? How long can you keep going and keep the store open?
Yeah, we're dealing with that. And as I said, we're strong. So we have our faith and the belief that everything will go away eventually and we will get through it. It's just, I guess, a big bump on the road. But we're here to stay. So it won't break us.
Well, I know it won't break you, and I'm going to make sure it doesn't. So before I do what I'm about to do, tell the folks about Ally's Cookies. What do you guys sell? What do you specialize in?
So everyone loves cookies, right? So are we. So we have cookies, and we have gluten-free cookies and vegan cookies and cookie cakes and ice cream and coffee. And we made everything from scratch. And that's who we are.
All right, but forget vegan and all those cookies. You have real cookies too, right? You have delicious cookies with sugar and eggs and all that stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Do you deliver? Can people order online? What kind of setup do you have?
So we have a website, AliceCookiesAmory.com, and we also ship out of the state. So if you're not living in our area, so we can ship it to you. All you need to do is send an email to info@AliceCookiesAmory.com. Or call the store, and I will give you a call back.
All right. Here's the deal, Ally.
Yeah.
Ally, no far. Sorry. You're going to have to hire some help because, personally, I am about to order a blank ton of cookies, and I know the WSB radio listeners are about to order a bunch of cookies. So you're going to have to hire extra staff because it's just simply horrible that your business has been suffering because of this. So it's A-L-I-S, AliceCookiesEmory.com. I'm going to put the link on all of my social media accounts at Mark Arum, and you're going to see how much the listeners of WSB Radio support you and how much they love cookies because we're about to bust your doors wide open with orders, my friend.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. And listen, I'm going to keep your contact info. I know the boss usually doesn't like us doing remote broadcasts, but would you be open to have me do my show at the cookie shop one day?
Of course. You're more than welcome.
All right. Nafar, stay strong. We got your back, buddy.
Thank you so much.
There you go. Nafar Shabliz from Ally's Cookie. Links are posted on the social media. Longoria and I are about to order 5 dozen cookies for tomorrow. I expect you'll do the same. Thank you so much for the support, by the way. All right, when we come back, we're going to update the Russia. I almost call it the USSR. That's not a thing anymore. The Russia-Ukraine war and a horrible terrorist attack in Russia. Updating those big stories next on the Mark Arum Show. Again, the link to Ally's Cookies on all my social media is at Mark Arum, M-A-R-K-A-R-U-M. I do not have a link for Deborah's blueberry empanadas. That's teamwork
They're here in the studio.
Longoria's freshly grown blueberries into Deborah's freshly baked empanadas. No empanadas at Ally's, but they've got cookie cakes and ice cream and all that good stuff. So Allie'sCookiesEmery.com. Links on all my social media accounts. Updating this just horrible story out of Russia. New details emerging after deadly attacks in the southern Russian region of Dagestan that targeted a synagogue and churches in two cities. Gunmen killed at least 19 people, including multiple police officers and an Orthodox priest. CBS News correspondent Charlie Daggett has more.
Russia's predominantly Muslim Republic of Dagestan has been a hotbed of Islamic extremism for decades. We were there in 2013 after the Boston bombers were believed to have been radicalized there in the weeks before triggering their homemade bombs at the Boston Marathon. Dagestani officials say the anti-terror operation has concluded, and a number of attackers are under arrest.
Is there anything worse than terrorist attacks at houses of worship? That, I mean, throughout history, those have been sanctuaries. You go there, there's everyone's safe there. Just awful. We'll continue to update that story. Also in Russia, the Russians have summoned the U.S. ambassador to complain about weapons shipments to Ukraine. CBS News correspondent Cammy McCormick has more.
The U.S. ambassador was called to the foreign ministry in Moscow. Russia says the U.S. is engaging in a hybrid war and blamed Washington for a deadly missile attack in Crimea. The Kremlin has warned of consequences and says the war in Ukraine is entering the most dangerous phase to date.
The shocking part of that story is that I had no idea. We still have an ambassador in Moscow.
Yeah, I thought everybody left.
Yeah, that's crazy. I would not want that gig.
Heck no.
No way. That's crazy. I really thought we had pulled all of our ambassadors out of Russia, but what do you do if you're the ambassador? First of all, what are you thinking if you're the ambassador in Moscow? But what are you doing when Putin's like, hey, come see me? Hell no, right?
I got a lunch date. Sorry.
Yeah. How about we Zoom? Microsoft Teams.
Yeah.
Freaking Microsoft Teams. God. We'll do a Teams meeting, Vlad. I'm not coming to the Kremlin. No, we're good. I had no idea. One more international story. You know I love The Crown, Deborah. Have you watched The Crown?
Yeah, I watched
right?
The Crown, yeah.
Do you know one of my favorite characters in The Crown was?
Who? Anne?
Princess Anne.
Yeah, she was pretty rad.
So you haven't seen The Crown long ago.
No, I have not.
But Princess Anne was King Charles's younger daughter, right?
Yeah, is the
younger
queen's
sister. Yeah, the queen's sister. Loved her character. Apparently, she's in the hospital with minor injuries and a concussion after she was apparently injured by a horse. BBC's News royal correspondent Daniela Ralph has more.
She suffered minor injuries and concussion. We're told that she was walking on the estate when this happened, but that there were horses in the vicinity, and it seems that her head injuries were consistent with some kind of impact from a horse's head or leg. So although it says she was walking rather than riding, there does seem to have been some involvement of horses in terms of the injuries that she suffered.
Wasn't that her, I mean, in The Crown, wasn't that her gig? Like she rode horses.
I think all of them were into horses, right? They had several of them. They would race them, but didn't she participate in the Olympics?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. So she, Princess Anne, so the sister of King Charles III, hospitalized. Hope she gets well soon.
Longoria's fact of the day.
All right, going back to your postage stamp question earlier, every deceased U.S. president as of 2023 has appeared on at least one U.S. postage stamp, and all but Richard Nixon and the two most recently deceased presidents, Gerald Ford and George H.W. are not.
They'll
or
both,
have not.
Well, but, George W. will get on.
Yeah, for sure.
Ford and maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Well, if all the other ones do.
Yeah,
William Henry
Nixon.
Harrison only was a president for 30 days, and he got a stamp.
All right, so except Nixon. I guess Nixon, that's not going to happen.
They're like, we'll wait as long as possible.
So, I mean, unless he gets convicted for, like, serious stuff, I think Trump will eventually be on a stamp.
I guess they're all going to get one, yeah.
Biden will be on a stamp.
Don't they want to put him on the $5 million bill or something
like
that?
The $500 bill, yeah. Trump on the $500 bill. That's what they're trying to do. All right, that very timely, very apropos fact of the day, Longoria. Someone might have just won.
And now, are you guys ready for the Mark Arum Star of the Show?
You already won it because you brought in chicken minis and 57 hash browns from Chick-fil-A, so Longoria gets the star of the show. The lovely Longoria ladies get star of the show. Bring your daughters to work day. Are they still in there? You send in the traffic center. Say hi, guys.
Yeah, they're not listening. They have headphones on, man. They're watching YouTube.
They're listening to B98. There you go. You guys are star of the show. Deborah Green did a great job, as always, securing the interview with Nafar and Photoshop. Sweet P did some amazing audio stuff for me, so he gets a star of the show. And our guests, we had Peter King on down in Florida, updating the three-year anniversary of that horrible apartment collapse in Florida. He gets a star of the show. Robert Berger joined us live from Jerusalem. He gets a star of the show. Eric Erickson gets a star of the show, the conservative Viking, as does Andy Gobiel from Atlanta's Hartsfield-Jackson Airport. That might have been a record for the number of stars of the show we gave out in one. That was like 22 right there. You know what? Sabrina gets one. Michelle Wright gets one.
There you go. Might as well make it 24.
I'm going to get one, too.
25. There you go.
There you go. 25. That's it. That's the max. That's the max we can do. Speaking of, Sabrina standing by with news, weather, and traffic. Eric Erickson is live. Monitoring what's going to happen with the Supreme Court tomorrow. We'll update the Israel-Hamas war. We'll tackle our top local issues as well. Oh, I forgot one more. We're going to go 26. Nofar from Ali's Cookies. Thanks for joining us. She gets a star of the show. Go order your cookies. The link to the cookie shops on all my social media is at Mark Arum, MarkArum. Stay safe. Have a great Monday, Atlanta.
Guests of the Mark Arum Show stay at the All Suite Omni Hotel, located in the heart of Chicago's Magnificent Mile.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.